And a beautiful Arizona Saturday morning to you all. Welcome as we open the doors and invite the great state of Arizona to join the weekly Rosie on the House radio broadcast. It's 8 o'clock and it's time for the Outdoor Living Hour here with Rosie Romero, Jay Harper, Jennifer's call screening at 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you. And you can text your questions in at 411-923 if you'd like to talk landscape, gardening, lawns, or weather predictions. I'm predicting we're past our frost.
That's probably a pretty safe bet. You know, usually Valentine's Day is middle of February is the average. It's not the last. I mean, the last is like the end of March. And that, you know, as weird as the weather's been, that wouldn't shock me.
To get another cold snap.
If that happens this year, I mean, you know, they're still saying El Nino's sitting out there. We've had a little dose of it here and there, but nothing to really impress us, you know, through February so far has been real dry and warm. So, you know, who knows? But I'd say at some point what's happening is plants are starting to grow. Even the plants that had some frost damage, like some of the lantanas and bougainvilleas. And when they start pushing new growth, that's usually the sign to go ahead and start cutting them back. It's also a good indicator as to how far at least you need to prune. We encourage people to do a pretty heavy, severe pruning this time of year and then leave the plants alone the rest of the growing season so that you have this beautiful, rejuvenated, naturally shaped plant instead of shearing all the time into odd little Disneyland characters that we see in our landscape, like balls and boxes and wedges and all kinds of weird things. So I think you're probably in most parts of the valley pretty safe to say that our frost danger is gone, which means it's time to plant tomatoes and peppers and squash and cucumbers and all those warm weather loving vegetables you need to get in because they love warm weather. They don't love hot weather. They like 85, 90 degrees, not 115 degrees. So we want to get tomatoes in before and get them producing before it gets extremely hot in June, July, and August. So now's the time.
Varieties.
You know, tomatoes are something there are, you know, with all of the heirloom varieties that are out there now and the conventional hybrids, there are so many varieties. If you ask one person, you'll get, it's hard to pick one. So I still think celebrity, if you just want tried and true, I'm going to get some tomatoes, early girl or celebrity would be the two. And then, of course, cherries and yellow pears are kind of can't misses if you want a smaller tomato. Some of the heirlooms that I really like, I love one called Taxi, which is a yellow, hence the name Taxi. There's one called Cream Sausage that's really fun. It's kind of an oblong, creamy, yellow-white tomato that's really good. And you know, we'll get... Somebody will call and correct me and say that's not the best. I'm not saying it's the best. It's what I like the best. You know, so, but if somebody is kind of a novice or kind of just wants to make sure they have tomatoes, you still can't go wrong with early girl. And celebrity is just absolutely, hands down, I think, the most reliable tomato we have.
And occasionally you have to rotate your tomato crop. You can't keep planting it in the same spot every year, or is
well,
there amendments
go for any,
to
that
soil?
Go for really anything. You know, I mean, you probably shouldn't plant peppers in the same spot or squash or, you probably want to make sure that you move things around a bit or at least then modify the soil enough if you have to, because a lot of times you just only have so much space. And here's kind of the conundrum you're going to run into right now is that, you know, all of your lettuce and your cool season crops, your lettuces and chards and spinaches are just looking beautiful, and maybe even carrots and beets and turnips. So where do I even plant my tomatoes? If you don't have a very big garden and you don't have this empty space kind of waiting for them, sometimes you have to create spaces as you harvest things and plant. So sometimes that's easier said than done to rotate. You know, we don't have an acre of garden that we can kind of start flip-flopping things. So just make sure that you are taking some time and amending the soil with fresh compost and some nutrients and getting the soil ready before you plant.
And we're here for you, the listener. If you've got a question, again, it's 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE-4U. Let's see, clear some of these lines. Starting with Bonita and Chandler wants to talk fertilizer. Good morning.
Good morning to you. So, of course, life is beautiful. I look outside. It's hot. I have weeds in my grass. Is it too late for a pre-emergent? What do you recommend? Should I fertilize now?
Okay, there's a lot going on in that question. It's never too late to use pre-emergent because it will always work from that point going forward for a few months. It's too late for the pre-emergent to prevent any weeds that have already come up in your garden. So you're going to have to do kind of a two-step process. You're going to have to decide how to eliminate the weeds that you have there now.
In my grass, okay.
Yes, and so whether that's pulling them, or spraying them with a post-emergent, you know, post meaning after. So after they've emerged, we can spray weeds in lawns, depending on what kind of weed you have. So we need to identify the type of weed you have and identify the type of lawn you have. So we make sure we spray with something that won't kill your lawn and yet will take care of the weeds. And or you can pull the weeds. Or then you need to use the pre-emergent or vice versa. It doesn't really matter. So never too late for pre-emergent to start working, but it'll only start working from when you put it on going forward for the allotted time.
And if you're putting it in a container garden, you obviously don't want a pre-emergent on anything you're trying to start from seed.
Well, or any lawn. And you have to time your pre-emergent not too late in the summer if you plant a winter lawn, because it will keep your winter grass from germinating and coming up. So, there's some timing issues involved in using pre-emergent herbicides. But generally, we want to apply them about the first or early part of fall so that it takes care of the winter rains and the winter weeds. And then we want to do it again about now or sometime in early to mid-spring so that we take care of those weeds that might come up with monsoon moisture or hot weather.
Well, there you go, Bonita. Hope that helped answer your question.
Yes, it did. Thank you.
All right. You have a great weekend and have fun on those
weeds.
You
know, and another, it's always easier to control weeds no matter how you're going to control them while they're young, while they're small. Don't let them get big, because even if you spray them and kill them, then you got big dead weeds that you have to deal with. So whether you're hula hoeing or pulling or spraying, the more young and tender and succulent they are, the easier they are to kill. They also don't have to worry so much as to how you're going to get rid of then the dead growth from the dead weeds.
Goats. Ours are very handy in that regard.
There you go.
Let's bring Sue into the conversation and see how we can help her with a little bee problem. Good morning, Sue.
Good morning. Good morning. I'm a real believer in that pre-emergence, John Jay. I do it every spring and fall. It's great. My question is this. We have a mature ash tree which has two or three cavities in it, and that birds perhaps have burrowed in. But now we've got a nest of bees I just discovered this weekend. And I've called and I've Googled for Save the Bees. Everybody wants to exterminate. Do you have someone that you would recommend that would capture the bees and relocate them?
Yeah, I really don't. I could give you somebody's name maybe off the air. I wouldn't want to give his name and number out over the air because I'm not sure he would appreciate that. But maybe somebody that could talk you through it. And maybe there are, you know, some guys that will do it. But most of the time, I think the fear is that these bees that have settled somewhere are perhaps either Africanized or have some of that in them, and it's just not worth their time and effort. As much as we need bees, it's just not worth their time and effort to try and move them.
Now, there is a crazy old beekeeper
that
goes after those African ones and in live, and in fact, on his property.
But he doesn't try and move them.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. He's not afraid of Africanized bees at all. We're actually going to have him on here in about 3 weeks. I've got to finish putting together I went back to Raleigh, North Carolina this week to Bayer Advance Bee Center that they've established for investigating bee population and health and everything. But it's actually ArizonaLiveBeeRemoval.com, AZLiveBeeRemoval.
Well, there you go. There's our answer.
Eric Nisbet. He's up on Union Hills and about 28th Street.
Okay.
So you can look him up, and we'll make sure we get you his number off the air. But not afraid of those Africanized bees. In fact, he doesn't think anyone should be. Says the guy that's been stung 1,000 times, but you know, after about 200, you stop feeling him, he said.
Okay.
I'm just kidding. I'll just being silly, but he's not too worried about the Africanized ones, so give him a call. Let's bring Liz into the conversation from Tucson at 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE-4U if you'd like to join the conversation. Liz?
Yes, I have a shed that's a storage shed, and it's full. And I have a couple pack rats in there, and I don't want to set traps because then I have to go over and check. It's a rental, and I would have to check them all the time for dead rats. So I was wondering if I cleared it out and got rid of them, does a strobe light with a signal on it that I've seen advertised, do they work, or is that just a gimmick?
You know, you can tell the weather's warm. We've gotten a lot of insect questions really quick.
Well, I don't know, I guess, is the bottom line to that. A lot of those things are probably worth trying. We have used the at our cabin in the mountains. We have a real bad mouse problem because it's closed up for all winter. And we've used those little plug-in sound wave devices, I will have to say, with some pretty fair success.
Mm.
So I don't know about a strobe light, but I think the hypersonic, now you probably don't have electric to this shed. Maybe you do, where you can, because you have to plug these into a receptacle and you leave them plugged in. So might be worth trying.
Well, I mean, the Bonide products too for critters, really, you know, it's like a hot pepper kind of a smell, and it might be a diversion as well.
Especially if you have animals in the backyard, you know, it's safe for that application. It's like most things with pest control, especially when it's four-legged creatures that can burrow, it's a combined attack. Mm-hmm. there's usually
right.
not a silver
one,
bullet.
Not one thing, and sometimes you have to change. They get used to something. They're smart.